Hey, did you, like a great many 80s kids, confuse the Witches of Eastwick with just a fun, spooky romp? Well, saddle up for a big old dose of cello orgasms, cherry vomit, and Jack Nicholson pulling every conceivable face. Yes, The Witches of Eastwick was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two nuns which might only exist in Thaisa Farmiga's mind. It's Camila Adams.
Bless it be.
And Robin Hitchcock.
I'm French Canadian. I'm neither of those things.
No one has ever been angry saying that before that moment.
He was so pissed.
Let's just immediately move on from whatever Tony was doing last week and note that he gave us our first Jack Nicholson movie right after the Lakers win a title. How about that?
Hey!
Oh.
It's perfect.
He is a Lakers fan, is what I'm inferring from this. I have images in my brain of him sitting courtside.
Me too. Like with his sunglasses, and hair and eyebrows askew.
Right.
It's like the last thing that we're sure he does. Like, you know how he's kind of vanished in recent years? Right. And like, there's those rumors about how maybe he doesn't act anymore because he can't learn lines anymore. And he's not in the front row of the Oscars every year. Mm-hmm. He's still courtside at almost every Lakers home game.
So when he doesn't show up at a Lakers home game, that's when we worry. That's when we have to send in.
That's when something is wrong.
The troops. Gotcha. You know what? Jack's cool. He don't need to act anymore. He's fine. He's got all the money.
Old man.
Like, let this man enjoy his twilight years.
Yeah.
There was talk that they were going to remake Academy Award nominated foreign film Tony Erdmann.
No.
With Kristen Wiig and Jack Nicholson. And Jack was going to come back for that. But then he was just like, no, and dropped out.
Was that version also going to be 3 hours long? Tony Erdmann is my nemesis in film form.
As long as it has the scene where she dances with, was it a big bear outfit? Or... as long as it has that scene and that other scene where everyone's like, this work meeting is everyone's naked. It's a bonding thing, and everyone just goes with it.
Huh. I don't remember any. Those are the two things that made me feel like get me out of this room. The thing that sticks with me is she is trying to get into a form-fitting dress and zip it up by herself, which is like one of the main reasons that I got married was so I wouldn't have to zip up my own dresses anymore.
Word.
And she uses a fork.
Mm.
She hooks a fork into the zipper and uses it to pull that up. So that's what every time I have to zip something up when Colin's not here, I think about Tony Erdmann, which is a movie I hate.
I would probably stab myself terribly if I were to try it.
I've never actually tried the fork trick.
I have definitely I've definitely pulled a muscle trying to zip up my own dress.
No one in the world, including Jack Nicholson, remembers Tony Erdmann. So what are we what are we doing? Except I was going to the Oscars party and my original pun menu plans fell through and I went to the prepared food section at Giant Eagle and saw a thing of rigatoni and went, rigatoni Erdmann, I did it. And everything was fine.
And comedy was saved.
The Witches of Eastwick. I definitely had never seen this movie. Had either of you?
I had seen pieces of it and that's it. I had never seen it in its entirety.
Same. And I remember, like I said in last week's episode, I remember watching it and having that I shouldn't be watching this feeling. And there was also, while rewatching it last night, I kept having those moments where you remember what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I never could have told you that at one point in The Witches of Eastwick, Jack Nicholson puts his entire arm into a gallon of ice cream. But as right when he said ice cream, I was like, oh, his whole arm goes into a thing of ice cream. So like those little unlocking memories. But I don't actually think I ever saw the whole thing.
This movie is way more wet and goopy than you expect it to be.
It was definitely
wet at all times.
This is true. It's definitely much more raunchy than I was anticipating. Like a lot of just like the flat out. He's like, I like a little pussy after dinner. I was like, wait, what? What happened? Was
not even after dinner, after lunch.
Right, after lunch. And
hang on, that's the sleepiest part of the day. Why then?
Afternoon delight, man.
Afternoon delight is a nap for me these days.
It's the best part of quarantine. I'm going to have to ask Colin if I could keep that in.
Report back on whether or not that's okay to say. On that note, if you haven't seen The Witches of Eastwick, or apparently a lot of people are like, I saw that, and they're thinking of some combination of like
Daryl Van Horn's name.
Right. Exactly.
The Witches, and yeah. Which, by the way, everyone's like, why can't I? He just said it, and I can't remember it. I'm like, this isn't remarkable. That happens to me with every name I ever hear.
Yeah,
that's
seriously
what I do every day.
Right, if I don't say their name right away, then more than likely it's gone.
But we have to know what happened. We have to tell the people, you know, all tell of you, what happens in this movie. And here to get that done with this week's 60-second recap is Camila Adams. Ready and go.
In the small town of Eastwick, we have Alex, an artist, Jane, a music teacher, and Sookie, who has 5011 children. One girl's night, after a few martoonies, the ladies accidentally conjure up their so-called perfect man. The mysterious and eccentric Daryl Van Horndog rolls into town. He meets and successfully beds each lady, even though he leaves much to be desired in the looks, class, couth, and human being department. They all meet up for tennis one day, and all the women realize that they may be magical, sort of. Now they are quadruple or something, and the town is giving them side-eye. Especially Felicia, who knows exactly what's going on and tries to warn everyone. Daryl and his dames magically choke Felicia up with cherries, and her husband ends up killing her. Bye, Felicia. The ladies get spooked and break up with Daryl when they all find out that they are pregnant. He starts to retaliate, and they come back for some payback of their own. Is he the devil? Are they witches? They make a voodoo doll and send him on his way, and the ladies live happily ever after while raising their demon spawns.
Beautiful. Great. I'm actually looking at the clock. I'm going to assume that was under a minute.
It was about 51 seconds. Very well done. And thorough, especially because the last half of this movie is like, stuff happens, they get rid of them. Like,
right.
like very specific early on, and then in the back half of this movie wanders around like it's trying to find its car at the airport parking lot. It's just
exactly.
Like...
Exactly. Like
we'll
originally,
see where we end up.
Originally, very... like, my last sentence of that was like, and there's 15 more minutes of the movie that are unnecessary.
Very over-the-top parking lot.
The science
yeah,
episode.
For a segment of the movie where nothing happens, so much happens.
Right. And it's surprising to me why it takes so long before we get into any actual witchery for a movie called The Witches of Eastwick.
I mean, they make it rain.
And it's all like, did we do that? It's just a coincidence. Like the whole time, like no one's ever like really like honing in like their whole true witchcraft
right.
abilities. And it's still just kind of like it's just mostly also, about how much the should be the orgy of Eastwick. That should be the title of this film.
It's weird because it's like, is it unusual that they are witches? We have no way of knowing. Like, how did these three friends all turn out to be witches? Were they drawn to each other because they are witches, or are all women witches? Right?
Ooh, yeah, I think that's what.
And, Daryl and was... there's a chicken or the witch situation here in that like, okay, are they witches because he was coming to town? Did he come to town because they're witches? Were they really witches, or were there some coincidences? And then he,
witchified
you know,
them?
fucked the witch into them. I don't know.
I completely interpreted it as they are witches. He was drawn to the town because they started using their witchy power, including the whole like describing him.
Right.
Like, please let a man like this come to town. And then I do think that by fucking him, he intensified their witchy powers.
Right.
Let them live deliciously.
Right.
There's a whole lot of, okay, we'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
I mean,
here are the
are
facts
we there? Let's so we do the facts.
Yeah,
okay.
We got to do the facts. Yeah. Just the facts,
here are
ma'am.
The facts, and then we'll be there. And boy, will we. The Witches of Eastwick was released June 12th, 1987, but it was not the number one movie in America that weekend. It finished second its opening weekend with $9.4 million. First went to the debuting Predator, which earned $12 million. The Witches of Eastwick reached number one in its second week, and just barely. The photo finish for June the 19th to 21st of 1987 went, Witches of Eastwick, $8,251,230. Predator, $8,225,869, a difference of just over $25,000. One screen, in other words, between number one and number two. So which is then, in its second weekend, became the 12th number one film of the year. By the way, the full history of this podcast now has covered the top three of that weekend, because there's a You Can't Handle the Truth episode on Predator. Now we're talking about Witches of Eastwick. And number three was Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Witches of Eastwick fell to third in its third weekend, behind two debuts, Dragnet in first and Spaceballs in second. Who released two very specific parodies on the same weekend?
Somebody was not doing their homework.
Yeah, fools.
Sleep at the wheel.
And so Spaceballs isn't on our list. Schedule it better, Mel Brooks.
Aww.
You're a national treasure. Do what you want. Witches of Eastwick stayed in the top 10 for 6 weeks, earned $63.7 million, just barely cracking the top 10 for that year. It's 10th for 1987, barely finishing ahead of Dirty Dancing. The source novel by John Updike was published in 1984 and has been adapted 5 times.
What?
This film, 2 television pilots which were not picked up, a 2009 ABC series just called Eastwick that was picked up but canceled in the middle of its first season, and a musical which had a 17-month run on the West End but has never received a Broadway production. There's also a sequel to the novel, The Widows of Eastwick, published in 2008, so hey, we could get another movie. Is John Updike good? I don't know.
I've never read him.
Really?
Okay. Here's the thing. I am not a book person. I am not well educated when it comes to literature.
I don't
so
read
take
the books.
All of this with a pound of salt. However, I did read the first Rabbit book and hated it. I read it because my dad was like, you got to read this book. And I was like, this is a book for boys. Like, and it is, you know, have you ever read a screenplay written by a man and the way they describe women?
Mm-hmm.
Or there's like a Twitter account that just puts that in. Mm-hmm. If you ever want to know how disgusting men are and how much they hate women, read the screenplay for Hell or High Water, which is otherwise, it seems like it's not a sexist movie. But if you read the screenplay, hidden sexist depths.
Wow.
Anyway, that's how he writes everything. And so when I saw his name in the credits, I was like, oh, no. Like, I was like, a movie with 3 female leads written by this guy who hates women about them being witches. Right. Oh, no.
Well, I kind of caught the gist of that just from the fact that Jack Nicholson was top billed. Like, he was before.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Nicholson's top billed in Batman.
That's... Is he?
Like, he just had that level of stardom in the 80s.
It's like, even before it was like, Jack Nicholson in a so-and-so production in blah, 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 Witches of Eastwick.
Right.
And it's like, damn.
That is how big a star he was. But
yeah.
Get off his dick a little bit. I don't think this movie is sexist. It's open to both interpretations, like you said, like the chicken or the witch.
Right. That's surprising, that coming from you.
I'm normally the person who's all about sexism cop. I really felt like they did a really good job of making the women characters clearly the protagonists, making their shortcomings as people believable and real and not tied to their womanhood and more tied to their humanity in a supernatural situation. And I read Jack Nicholson's character's misogyny as presented on its face and not presented as truth. Like, they're like, here's what misogynists are like. And he's literally the devil. So, or a demon or whatever.
Right.
So it's like, he's the bad guy. So what he says about women is not what the movie is saying about women.
I mean, I, whose opinion on this matter does not count, agree, especially in that, you know, as these three women become, you know, whatever you want to say, actualized, liberated, you know, begin living their lives, the townspeople are painted as being dumb for being annoyed at that. It's like, right. Yay, these women are doing what they want, living however they want and not caring. And look at the dumb rubes who don't like that. Mm-hmm. But Camila, counterpoint.
I feel like this does not paint. I feel like it paints women to be like kind of idiots. Just by the simple right. fact of how simple it is for him to fuck all three of them. And then they all get together into this whole couple situation, this quadruple situation where everything is like, you know, and even in the beginning when he first meets Alex, aka Cher, and she reads him to filth and basically tells him, you know, whatever, like you
what a great scene.
Yeah, I love it.
That half of the scene.
Right, yeah.
Cher's monologue is incredible.
Right.
And Robin, then, can you cut in that whole monologue right
I'll
here?
I'll try to. I will try yeah. to, yeah.
Well, you know, I have to admit that I appreciate your directness, Daryl, and I will try and be as direct and honest with you as I possibly can be. I am positive that you are the most unattractive man I have ever met in my entire life. You know, in the short time we've been together, you have demonstrated every loathsome characteristic of the male personality and even discovered a few new ones. You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, you're morally reprehensible, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell. You know, you're not even interesting enough to make me sick.
And then they flip it around, like right when she's getting ready to leave, and then he comes along and starts whispering all this bullshit, all this, every, between her and Susan, that he gives them both basically the same, like, speechifying business of, like, you know, the what the relationship of men and women is supposed is and how, you know, it all basically sucks. And he, like, feeds them this line, like, Sookie, this line about, I wish I was a woman, and, you know, all this. It just, I don't know. It's just, I know that you might be right in saying that this movie is not misogynist. I will go ahead and agree with that because, okay. because Jack or Daryl is just basically, yes, he's just going on and spewing all of this nonsense. But then again, it's also like, is there some sort of mystical power that he has, which is why that he's able to control or get this control or get the upper hand where they're concerned and be able to have this sort of this relationship that he's got with all of them? Is it because he's a demon of sorts? And but then it's also like they aren't living their best lives until dude shows up.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're all these sad sacks because one, her husband died. One, her husband left her. No, two of them, their husbands left them. And they're just sitting around like being all bummed out and drinking martinis once a week. And it's like, no, that's not really. I mean, the only one that really had the most sense before Daryl showed up was Alex, in my opinion.
Agreed. 100%.
Yeah.
And you're right, because this movie is extremely heteronormative, even though I guess it's polyamory normative also.
Right, right.
But they are definitely, you know, liberated by a good dick.
Right.
Right. But at the end, they don't need a devil man anymore. They just steal his mansion and raise his probably evil babies.
Right. And you know what? And I am, even when they were like trying to banish him, even what's her name? Susan, Jane, whoever, was like
Susan
still, yes, yeah, she was like, I don't know, maybe we should. And you know, Cher's like, yeah, come on, grow up here. Let's fucking buck up here. We got to get rid of this dude. But like, even like when he's on the TV and he's like, goo goo gaga-ing with the babies, and they show up and they're just like, and turn the TV off. Like, no, I think it's a little more serious than that. I think we
I agree, but I also think that like the final shot being them turn like literally shutting him up is kind of cool. Like
we
definitely have power over you at this point. I also thought that him seducing them was mystical.
But devil also, powers.
Who among us has not been seduced by someone who we probably should not be seduced by?
Exactly. We've all been there.
Yeah.
I turned us onto a tangent with, is John Updike good? the answer, a provisional no. Who knows? I'll get something on Kindle. I'll see what happens.
Also, wait, to be fair, in addition to my one experience reading his book, one of his books 20 years ago, like when I did my women's studies in college, that is part of the academic read on him, is that he's sexist, and also that his rise to literary fame was, you know, him taking the white man shortcut to success.
There's just that little like micro generation of assuredly grumpy white guy authors that's like right before us, like John Updike and Philip Roth and Tom Wolfe. And it's like, I don't know, am I supposed to go back and read all of that, or is all of that going to look? Yeah, I've read a little bit of Philip Roth. Well, American Pastoral is great. What? Philip Roth? Who cares? Let's move on.
We're not just movie people.
Yeah. Witches of Eastwick was nominated for 2 Oscars. John Williams' score lost to The Last Emperor. I didn't know David Byrne was involved in that score and thus has an Oscar.
Oh, wow.
David Byrne has an Oscar for The Last Emperor.
Yeah.
Huh. That's I didn't know that either.
Beautiful little tidbit of trivia.
Today I learned. It was also nominated for Sound, Best Sound, also lost that to The Last Emperor. Not all is lost. It was still a very good night for Cher. She was there that night winning her Best Actress Oscar
in the
for Moonstruck.
Best Actress dress of all time.
Wait, she won an Oscar for this movie?
No, she won for Moonstruck.
Oh, gotcha.
Which is basically that dressing down of Jack Nicholson extended into feature length.
Got it.
But with it's an incredible movie. If you haven't seen it, absolutely watch it.
Yeah, again, I think I've seen pieces of it.
Mm-hmm. Witches of Eastwick did win the BAFTA for Best Special Visual Effects, which really, really
for most, I guess, in visual effects
in 87. That's kind of
that's what I'm thinking. Until the following facts, it beat The Fly, Full Metal Jacket, and Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, come
all
on.
All 3 of which have better visual effects.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't particularly remember Full Metal Jacket's effects, I assume. But certainly The Fly and Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Most definitely.
I think that it's because this movie used some, I don't know if it counts as CGI, but it used computer-assisted effects in a way that The Fly and Little Shop were more practical effects. And I think in the late 80s, they were like, computers?
We got this new thing.
They were certainly so pumped with their ability to do those tennis ball effects.
Right.
That they just did it for like 20 goddamn minutes.
Right.
Right.
Like, we get it. They're witchy and they're playing tennis. It's okay. But the other 80, like this is the other 80s winners of this award, and man, what a film festival this is, the BAFTA for Best Special Visual Effects: Poltergeist, Return of the Jedi, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Brazil, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and Back to the Future 2. So those, and then goofy snake creature Jack Nicholson in Witches of Eastwick. I don't know,
it doesn't make any sense.
In the like the Salvador Dali version of Jack Nicholson at the very end is pretty. That's a pretty cool image. I like
just,
that.
I was just why?
Yes.
I was just. I was just more. Why? Why do?
Yeah, it's not necessary. It definitely. If anyone was watching this movie thinking like maybe he's just a dude, they at the end they're like, no.
Right.
This is a beast.
Yeah. And that last Salvador Dali thing, I think that was more like, hey guys, look what I can do. And they're like, put it in. That was like a last minute.
I think you're right. And yet it still works for me.
Speaking of things that were just thrown in, one of the producers, John Peters, spontaneously at one point saw what a hit that Aliens, recent episode subject, Aliens had become. So he decided there just needed to be an alien in this movie. And so they went out and got an extra and made a suit and brought an alien to the set one day. And the producer was like, I don't care where, just put him in the movie. Just put him in any scene. And George Miller and Jack Nicholson had to be like, we're walking off if you don't get rid of that alien.
At least someone had some sense at that point. Because I was struggling hard. I was like, was there an alien? Did I fall asleep?
I feel like the obvious solution to that problem is have the Lurch character, played by the same actor who plays Lurch, Carol something, have him be an alien in one scene.
Right.
Because he could just do anything. I love also that he stays on for the women.
Right. I'm not sure I would have wanted him to stay on, though.
And when Jack Nicholson is like, here's Fidel, women love him. I was like, I do love him.
Wendy's like, get something for yourself, and he just gets a bunch of like toys and party supplies. Bless the career soul. On that guy. There's this role, Lurch, the giant from Twin Peaks.
Mm. Oh, right.
And he was just in Dr. Sleep. And, like, apparently, not only he fine, he's relatively unchanged.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Good for him.
Right?
What else? They also cut a hyper-realistic life-size animatronic of Veronica Cartwright that vomited cherries because it was far too disturbing to use.
Okay, that scene was already far too disturbing. I noped right out. I fast-forwarded.
Really?
And missed that her husband killed her. I thought that she cherried herself to death.
Cherried herself to death.
Did he?
He killed her.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I looked away for a moment, but I think there was, I don't think it was like on screen. I think it was like we see it in the shadows happen, mm-hmm. and then he just like goes back to his business. I think he was also like he had started drinking again. Somebody had mentioned, and so he was probably pretty tanked at that point. Pretty tanked and to his limit.
Also, so Veronica Cartwright.
Tell me how evil is here again. One more time. Tell me about the evil one more time.
Veronica Cartwright is perfectly cast.
Dude,
here.
I love the beginning of the scene. Like when she stands up is like, it's inside me. He wants to get inside me. I'm like, wow. We have absolutely crossed the line here. I don't know what's happening. But you, ma'am, are pulling this off.
I watched The Children's Hour recently in which she is a child and she also screams and cries a lot.
So she's got a thing.
Admittedly, she's having a rough time.
Oh, God, yeah.
This is not a good day for her, beginning to end.
Right. I don't, I've never broken a bone, but that spiel that the doctor tries to give her husband.
That's true.
That's on my notes to ask. Can you, what? Really?
I have like, never heard that.
Bone marrow goes to your brain and makes you like sad high for 6 months.
I mean, people die from that. People die from breaking. I mean, that happens in a separate piece. Another book I read. Look at me. I've read two books. But I don't think that's a thing where you get a fat embolism and just go a little crazy.
Right.
Ask Colin. He's a scientist, right? He knows all
the science stuff.
And finally, Jack Nicholson was not the first choice. The Daryl Van Horn role originally set for Bill Murray. Different, but still good.
I can see
Jack Nicholson is better.
Yeah, I could totally see it. I don't think Bill Murray would be as menacing. Little baby man meltdown that he has with Alex.
Right.
Like only Jack Nicholson could pull that off properly.
Yes.
The little
Jack Nicholson having the absolute time of his life in this movie.
Oh, it would be inaccurate to say that he's responsible for 50 of the points I'm going to give to this movie. It is accurate to say if Jack Nicholson is there and he's being this wackadoo, the movie cannot dip below a 50. Like that is a guarantee marker of quality.
I mean, it was entertaining in enough spots of it, despite any of my personal feelings that may be in it. I was still entertained, and it was mostly Jack Nicholson. And I was also kind of surprised at how much I enjoyed watching Cher. I guess I'd never really seen her in anything before.
Okay, homework assignment, you're watching Moonstruck.
I guess so. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen her in anything before. And I was also kind of surprised. That sent me down to like a rabbit hole on the interwebs. It's like, Jack Nicholson is taller than Cher?
I never would have guessed that. He reads short, she reads very tall.
Right, right. And I'm sure she reads very tall because of all her years spent next to Sonny. But
right.
But Jack is always like, I always thought he was like a little guy.
He definitely has small man energy.
Yeah, but apparently he's 5'10", or at least that's what he's telling the internet.
That 5'10" is Hollywood man for 5'7".
Right, right. Like 5'10", that's basically my height. I'm pretty sure I'm like 5'10".
You are a 5'10".
Like, yes, yeah.
You're like 2 inches taller than me. One thing I really love about this movie is how they do the like girls are different by their hair color thing.
Oh my God.
For a movie that I think is exclusively white people, right?
I may have seen one person of color in the background on a street somewhere, but for the most part.
Yeah. But they're like, yeah, let's get one of each kind of white lady.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Diversity. But speaking of the hair color, I was also kind of pulled out by every time, like once, you know, Susan Sarandon's character got some dick and her massive, like over the top fucking makeover, and every scene her hair is like wider or and wider, right, and wider.
Your hair gets frizzier the more dick you get.
Right. he has fucked the frizz into your hair, girl.
Can we read into the amount that they changed is inversely proportional to the amount they were repressed to begin with?
Right.
Susan Sarandon, completely different person.
Right.
After Michelle Pfeiffer, way more open and fashionable, but not that changed. Cher, no real difference.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because, like, you know, old girl Sookie, she had, like, you know, like 1,000 kids, so she's had plenty of dick in her life. So she...
I love when she's like, by the way, if we have sex, I will become pregnant.
It's like, I'm pretty sure I'm pregnant right now from just you looking at me.
That's the only moment that justified the presence of those kids. Both, like, the kid that Cher has every now and then.
Right.
And oh, yeah, that kid's so unnecessary. That's clearly maybe this character mattered in the book.
Right.
Yeah.
And when, like,
They were so underwritten in a movie that certainly could have had 15 minutes trimmed out of it. That's like, yeah, just get them out of the movie.
Yeah, because yeah, I was like forgetting about her every time. Like, I think they show her at the beginning of the movie, and I thought that maybe it was a coworker at first. And it wasn't clear to me that she didn't look like a teenager. And then later on, Jack's like, oh, you need to go home and feed your kid. I'm like, she's got a kid? So it was like definitely completely, she was unnecessary. She wasn't needed. And I was also confused by when, maybe this was something that got cut in editing, or maybe I looked down for too long, but when he comes back after they've broken up with them, and he goes to Michelle Pfeiffer's house, and she's at the door, she's got sores on her mouth.
That was from when he, like, when they leave him after Veronica Cartwright gets murdered. You know, that he puts snakes in Cher's bed because she said she's afraid of snakes. And
right,
he makes Susan Sarandon age because she
but
said
he doesn't
she's
do that
aging.
Until that's after.
That's after?
Yeah, he goes to each of their houses first. And then he goes home and goes into a downward spiral. And that's when Susan has gone to the doctor and found out she's pregnant and gone and snuck, like, gone to his house and sees him do this. So, like, when, like, before that, she's in the doorway, and you can see, like, there's sores on her face, and I was just wondering if I had missed something, or if that was just probably, like, something that was cut.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe it went out of, it was originally supposed to be in the order that makes sense, where he afflicts her with pain, and she gets sores on her mouth. Also, very George Miller-y detail, sores on the mouth.
Ew.
He loves that stuff.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Susan Sarandon's in the grocery store and everyone's judging her because she has sex now.
How dare you?
Is her walking down the thing, eating pickles in public, the world's worst visual metaphor for, I'm okay with dicks now, hey everybody, I'm eating pickles in public, get it?
I thought it was just supposed to be like, hey, hello audience, she's pregnant. Because she's like eating pickles in the grocery store and like grabbing all these random foods to go with it.
I just read it as she has tapped into her id.
She's like, fuck it.
Yep. I want pickles and I don't want a bra.
Any three of those scenarios works. It doesn't change the movie at all.
Right.
But by the way, during her reawakening, getting an elementary school band to not suck is definitely black magic. The flying, the curses, the cherry vomiting, none of that is as impressive as you made children sound okay.
Right. And which is, I guess, why reacts the way he does. Because I was like looking in the room, like, is there something supernatural happening besides just them sounding good? He like runs away like he saw a tail on her come out of her skirt.
So I guess then the question is, this is undoubtedly like fun and worth watching and a lot. Is this good? Is this may be good. I think so. It's just very hard to tell.
There's definitely great performances by everybody involved.
Yes.
As far as the script goes, I feel like it could use some tweaking. There's a lot, and it definitely
could be tightened up a little bit.
Yeah, because like
it's a little sloppy.
Yeah, and a little long. It runs just a little too long. Mm-hmm. But again, like solid performances by everybody.
Yeah,
on screen.
I'm giving it a very good score. I really liked it. I don't think it's for everybody, and I agree that it has some weaknesses, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, especially for the fact that I will no longer ever confuse it with Hocus Pocus again.
There's so much cherry vomiting. Like,
really?
I did have to look away.
I also fast-forwarded like, Jack Nicholson's cherry vomit portion.
Oh, God, it's so terrible. All I'm thinking was, like, if I was in there, like, the minute he came blowing into the church, I would have been like, well, this is time for me to go. I'll see you guys later. And, like, there's no fucking way. Like, people are hanging out and getting cherry vomited on. Like, come on, guys. And you're still there? What are you doing?
His speech is great. I don't know what he said. I don't know what his point was. I couldn't tell you one thing that he said. And every second of it was great.
Right.
Is that when he is talking about why men hate women?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, yeah. So I watched this movie right after watching the most recent episode of The Vow. Mm. The Wound episode.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
Camila, have you watched? Okay, well, that episode is the... Let's listen to Keith Raniere talk about why he is a misogynist.
Holy shit.
And he literally says the same stuff. It was so weird.
Oh my God.
And I mean, I guess there's no new misogyny under the sun. No. But.
Right.
One of these days, you and I are going to have to sit down and talk about The Vow like extensively. Yes. Because.
This brings our references to The Vow streak on the show to, I believe, 4 episodes. We'll see.
So it turns out I have seen a couple of Cher films, Mask, which I saw ages ago and really enjoyed, and Burlesque,
yep. which oh, I've never I seen
also
Burlesque.
I also enjoy how that movie is so terrible, but I enjoy the shit out of it.
I do not know anyone who has seen Burlesque and did not enjoy it.
Really? Okay, good. I'm not alone. Like, soundtrack is super fun too.
And I mean, it isn't
Silkwood. Hmm. I think she was nominated for that too. And supporting.
And I feel like the video for If I Could Turn Back Time occupies a feature length place in my brain.
Is
right?
that the one on a boat?
Yes.
Okay.
And she's like performing for the Navy or something?
Yeah.
Got it. In a unitard? Yeah, that's totally right.
Yeah. Yeah.
A heavily thonged unitard, which was... there weren't a lot of thongs in the... Well, there weren't a lot of thongs, you know, out in the world in the late 80s, I would say.
They didn't call them that, but, like, people were... The tops of any unitard went up to your navel.
Right.
Like, the leg holes went... Yeah.
Like, what is it? Physical? Yes. Olivia Newton-John's video?
Man, except Susan Sarandon, I guess, not as much, but... Cher and Michelle Pfeiffer, especially, are just two of the most ageless people ever. Like, it can be 1960 or 2010, and they look basically the same.
Right? And I'm sure, like, Cher, I'm going to go out on a limb and be like, she may have had some work done. But Michelle, I'm not so sure. Like, she just might have, like, a clean living and good jeans.
Right. Perfect bone structure.
Right.
She's got something coming up that there's awards buzz for again.
I hope so. She's only one in the main cast who's not a winner.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. Does Richard Jenkins? We haven't talked about young brown haired Richard Jenkins.
Young in air quotes.
Right.
Right. Born 50.
Right. I'm like, oh, he looks so young. And then the camera zooms in and I'm like, well, his hair's brown, but he still has every line on his face.
And then he tilts his head down and you say, ah, there it is. Like a lot of balding spot, like right up in there. What's funny is like when he came on screen, Dan's like, you know, answering for him like, oh, hurry this up. I got this thing in a cabin in the woods later I got to get to. Really? Because.
Nice.
Well, let's rate it. I like it. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not an all-time classic, but I would tell people to add it to their spooky season rotation as long as you could take a lot of fluids. So a 72. I'm going to give it a 72.
That's a good one.
I'm going with 78.
Oh, wow.
I really liked it.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 65. No, I mean, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. And you're right. I would probably suggest like, yeah, sure. Put it in your Halloween rotation. It's for a good laugh. It could have some good laughs. Not as many scares, but.
You know. Right. I feel like there aren't a lot of spooky season movies in this particular genre where it's not a straight comedy,
right?
But it's funny and it's not really a horror movie, but it's undeniably spooky.
Right.
Speaking of Bill Murray, this is the Scrooged of Halloween.
Right.
Yes.
This is the adult comedy that is not right in the genre. You mm-hmm. know, because there are horror comedies, but that's not, and there are like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. That's a Christmas comedy. Scrooge is a little different. Right. This is the Scrooged of Halloween.
Perfect description.
That's great.
71 and two-thirds is yep. the final score for The Witches of Eastwick. Same score we landed on for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Those movies are exactly as good as one another.
I can feel that.
Yeah,
I would probably watch Witches before I watched Guardians Part 2. If those are my two options.
That's Robin's big anchoring.
Yeah.
Where I gave Guardians an 80, Camilo an 86, and Robin said 49.
Which, like, was begrudging. Like, I probably started at 25 for that movie.
To the bingo card.
We're so close. I don't think there's one off of 88.
One off of our 1988 square. The only question is if they double-cross him.
They do say, please go get us some ice cream.
Yeah, because I believe that the definition of double cross is believing one is on your side, only to find out that they're working against you.
I think that gives Sean a bingo, doesn't it?
Oh, snap.
No, it's not. I was waiting for either a president or a fist fight.
Fist fight is also a winning square for me. Let me just pull this up.
Still nothing.
All right. I think double cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one said they were getting too old for this. No. No, they did not.
I was watching something else and somebody said it and I was like, ah. I got, there was like a little whoo, and I was like, this isn't what this is.
Before we get to You Can't Handle the Truth, a devastating note. While we are going to keep Hocus Pocus on the list because of the belief that Tenet is lying, I hoped that it would just actually be the number one movie in America this weekend, given another week of Tenet falling, and that there's a lot of people are talking about Hocus Pocus right now. What was that? Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, but it did it because the number one movie in America is that Robert De Niro War on Grandpa or War with Grandpa movie.
What?
What?
That was Zac Efron?
Yeah, I know.
Or something?
No, not that movie. Not that broad comedy with a Robert De Niro and Grandpa in the title. A new movie.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I know. It's, hold on. I have to explain this because it is wild that this is the number one movie in America. The War with Grandpa is a 2020 American family comedy film with Robert De Niro, Uma Thurman, Rob Riggle, Cheech Marin, Jane Seymour, and Christopher Walken. It's one of those things that was on the Weinstein Company slate right when the shit went down. The original release was scheduled for February of 2018.
Oh, man.
And so it just kind of bopped around in nothingness for more than 2 years.
So it's a new mutant.
Yes, until they were like, the hell with it, throw it out. And the particular combination of like the 42 movie theaters that are still open and the drive-ins, it's the number one movie in America now. So now that shit is on the list.
Great.
Ugh, gross.
I cannot swear I won't go see it at a drive-in just to be like, okay, what's your deal?
All right.
So sorry to Hocus Pocus, and sorry that that's on the list. That's when I take great comfort in the fact that there are 1,267 movies on this.
Right.
Right.
The odds of any one of them breaking through are very slim. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Let's go to Camila first.
I don't think I watched any new movies, but I did watch The Haunting of Bly Manor in its entirety.
How is it?
Don't go in expecting a haunting of something. Like, don't go in thinking that this is going to be.
I can see why you would make that mistake.
Right? Like, I go in thinking, hey, I've seen the first one. Spooky shit's going to happen. Da 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 da. It's like, it's not a horror story. It's more like a horrific series of love stories, but it's not a horror film. So, you know, and doing that and now removing myself from that genre, you know, like after like, you know, okay, I'm not going to be scared. Okay, let's Let's sidestep and accept this for what it is. It's very good. So when...
I cannot stop laughing. Normally when we have a long pause like that, I edit it down. I'm gonna leave your full pause in. Because I could tell that you were like, what I'm about to say is absurd, and yet I have to say it.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
I've got this movie called Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Now don't expect Harry Potter to be in there.
And it's funny because I had read somebody's just like little blurb review about it. Like, there's, she had finished it and she's like, oh, that was, it was romantic and heartbreaking. And I'm like, romantic and heartbreaking? What is this? And yes, it is romantic and heartbreaking. I think that it is definitely enjoyable. There are, I feel like it could have been 2 episodes shorter, but like there's like a couple characters that I did fall in love with and I legit like shed a tear for them. And so it was like, so when you don't expect to be spooked out and scared, like there's a couple of like little things that happen, and but still, like, it's mostly about the fear that we have of disappearing from our loved ones' memories once we die. Oh. So that's like, that is the overall theme of this season of The Haunting.
Oh, the cocoa heartbreak, the specific cocoa flavor. Yes. Of heartbreak.
When exactly. I saw Coco, my niece, who was 7 at the time, just got in my lap at one point and just sobbed for the remainder of the movie, saying, I'm gonna be forgotten.
Oh no.
Pixar.
Right. Psychologically torturing kids, scarring children for years and adults.
And now they're dropping Soul on Christmas, and it's like, do you not think?
Dude who dies.
The fuck?
Do you not think that Christmas 2020 will be emotionally loaded enough?
Right? We're good, guys. Thanks. Just keep that shit.
Anyway. Robin, I think your main event might be mine, so
yes,
go ahead.
It's the 40-year-old version.
Oh, it's so good.
Realizing that our part of the country says virgin and version almost identically, I wouldn't have known that, but we do.
Right.
Just, it might be my new favorite movie of 2020. I loved it so much.
Right quick before you guys get into it, after I saw that, Sean, you had like, this is great on Twitter, and I was like, I didn't even know this was a thing. So I watched the trailer with my 17-month-old very close by, and the amount of times they say shit, and she says shit, 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 like maybe 3 times in a row in the trailer. And then I hear Kai, shit. And I'm like, and I could just shut it down and put it away. It's like, never speak of it again.
When Kaj is in bed, watch that movie.
Right.
It's so good. It's just, it really hits the sweet spot of combining, it's really funny. Like, I laughed so much, but it really is relatable, and all it has the full range of emotions. The full range of emotions, plus interesting things to say about the art world, which obviously I care about, and made me miss theater, but also made me cringe at all the things that are bad about theater and all the things that white people do and or, including myself, are complicit in theater. And
oh, man.
So, like, it makes you feel, it makes you think. What more could you want?
Nice.
What a hyper-targeted shot at the theater world. I know this is not very relatable for everybody. It's super relatable for me. Like, the way in which this, I might have said this before, this is where Renee Rabenold, who I run a theater company with, and I start complaining about art boners, where it's just, there's a specific type of old white theater person that their entire life is sitting around going, isn't this art so artful, and talking about the art to death and really obsessing over how great the creation of everything in their tiny little sphere of wherever they live in the world is, and they just have no perspective beyond that. And it's so infuriating, and this movie is the best skewering of that I've ever seen. But for the rest of the world, it's just a really good movie. Like Robin said, really relatable in terms of like this constant struggle, which I think is as acute for our generation as it's ever been, where it's like, do I just do my life as it's going, which is kind of fine and kind of problematic, but kind of fine, or do I, you know, do a bunch of stupid, risky things to try to, like, make something,
What's the... Right.
Yeah, that's so real here. And it...
And, like, above all of that, it also has things like some young guy going down on her, and she says, young tongue.
And her song's about a particular breed of male rump. I don't want to spoil that. It's too good. It's
like
really...
the dead mom stuff was hitting. Yeah. I feel like there's like, it's like choose your own adventure with this movie. Which piece are you gonna find relatable? Everybody's got something.
Yeah, it's either my top movie of the year so far or second to The Five Bloods. Very close to my top movie of the year in any case. And what a, you know, usually when it's like, this newcomer wrote, directed, and stars in this very personal movie, it can be a little bit like, but she's so good at all of those things. She's great in the movie. The script is excellent, and it's really, you know, beautifully directed.
Nice.
Oh, one note on that: this movie shot on film, and oh, wow. Like right when it's black and white, 35mm, and like right when it started, I was like, is this film? You know what I mean? Like, I was like, something is different. And what? Am I watching film? And I went and like, there's on Wikipedia, there's a Wikipedia page. It's like black and white movies since 1970. Mm-hmm. And I started like going through those and figuring out how many black and white shot on film movies since 1970 I've actually seen. And there's like, it's less than 10, I think.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, I think that was such a good choice because first of all, it just looks different. Mm. But I think it's specifically designed to be evocative of Woody Allen. And this is one of those movies like, you know, like Manhattan or unfortunately, especially with the low contrast, I thought of Celebrity, one of the worst Woody Allen movies. Mm. But this is exactly the kind of movie that Woody Allen got to make 50 times.
Right.
And having a black woman finally get to make it, it's just, oh, it's so good.
That's great. I look forward to watching that when Kaj has gone to bed.
Yes.
Speaking of Netflix, very briefly, and part of the reason I'll make it very brief is because I have to go to a Zoom Q&A with Mr. Aaron Sorkin in 25 minutes.
I mean, have a great time.
Right. No, he's...
Here's a question for him. How dare you?
Listen, I have my DVD set of Sports Night is right over there. I've had it for as long as I've
DVD.
had any DVD set.
We don't have time to talk about my complicated relationship with Aaron Sorkin because you have to go talk to Aaron Sorkin. But sometime, Sean, let's have that conversation.
And to be clear, I didn't submit a question. I'm just...
Oh, okay.
I'm politely attending because Netflix has been great to Critics' Choice Association members and has set up some of this. We talked about the Spike Lee one earlier in the year. Very happy to be there. And I generally like him.
But
the
briefly.
Trial of the Chicago 7.
Oh, yeah, that came out Friday.
Wait, really?
It's out in theaters, in your quotes, right now, and will be out on Netflix on Friday.
Great.
You know, it's very good in exactly the way that you expect it to be very good, and not a dime more. You know, it's like, this cast is great. It's an effective and compelling courtroom drama. It's a nice illustration of a serious ongoing problem in our political system that once again offers nothing but the most pat solutions to that problem. Mm-hmm. And it's really good and really watchable and nice to watch with a great cast and great performances. It achieves and is happy with that. It is a movie that is content to do the things it's going to do well and no more.
Well, all right. I'm totally going to watch it.
I'm going to watch
it. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you should, because it's good. It's just like... Like First Man. You remember First Man, the Neil Armstrong movie? You're like, this is great in the way it's supposed to be. Fine.
Is that the one with Ryan Gosling?
It is. Yeah. It is in my least favorite micro genre, Sad Space Man.
I love Sad Space Man.
I know. This is our biggest difference in our film opinions.
Yeah. But whether or not you watch Trial of the Chicago 7, watch the 40-year-old version. So let's draw a movie, shall we?
Yes, please.
And so for the fourth and final time this year, we will draw from the spooky season special selection. the 141 films on our list that can be somehow lumped into being seasonally appropriate. The number is 8. Remember, ooh, we're always cheering for a low number because that puts it in the 80s. Man, I've never been happier to be the only one with a veto because I'm not playing it. Everyone is watching Friday the 13th, A New Beginning.
Oh, God.
Heavens. Which one? Where does that fall?
Which one even? Yeah. I don't think it's one of the new, the good ones. And really, would The New Beginning be one of the good ones? Oh, man.
This is Jason, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
This is Jason.
I've never seen any of these.
Not even the original one?
I've seen parts of the original. And I'm, you know what? I might have seen the original like at a sleepover party where it was like on, but really we were talking about boys.
2, 3, 4, 5.
But like Jason's not even really in it.
Gotcha. This is the fifth one. From 1985.
We haven't gotten into this universe yet, have we?
How are you just going to say that, Robin, when you haven't seen any of them?
I think because I'm always excited when it's something I haven't seen. So I'm like,
are you going to dive in? I would think that some channel is doing like a marathon of sorts.
Do you plan to do any pre-research or are you just going straight to 5?
Well, let's find out what is streaming where. Right.
Excellent point. It's not like Halloween where it's like, watch the first one and then you kind of get it. Because as you said, the first one doesn't really have Jason in it. Even in the second one, he's kind of not really him yet. So it's like, do you begin with like 3 and 4, which are both kind of good? I don't know what to tell you to do.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a lot of them are available streaming for free anyway.
Well, then I will probably go into this knowing nothing and that's its own kind of fun experience.
Word.
Well, yeah, just dive right in and see what happens.
Well, plus I will tolerate watching a bad Jason movie in October before I will tolerate watching a bad Jason movie in like March. So,
I watched them all in March for some reason. They were all streaming somewhere at that time and quarantined again. And I was like, fuck it, let's go. And we just started tearing through them. No, this is going to be fun to talk about on the show because it is everything that is bad. I was going to say good and bad. It is everything that is bad about the Jason movies all in one film. So let's roll into the holiday that way. Before we wrap up, The Witches of Eastwick was released June 12th. That doesn't count because it was number one June 19th of 1987. What was the number one song in America?
Tiffany. I have a guess that came to me in a dream, which is In Excess.
Ooh.
No, that guy's just hot. So he's in dreams.
I mean, that's
just Michael Hutch is just always in my dreams. I don't know what you're talking about.
Their big album was 87.
Right.
They were all over that year, but no.
Not Tiffany?
No.
Whitney.
Mm.
No, keep it. You've got the gender right, though.
Gloria Estefan. The Miami Sound Machine.
Gloria, I think.
Madonna.
I think this is officially a one-hit wonder. Mm.
Jody Watley?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say mm-hmm?
No.
No, I said no. Sorry. Podcast problems.
Who's Jody Watley?
Black woman. She had these really thick eyebrows, a lot of really curly hair. Why can't I think of the name of the song?
Because she only had the one.
Right. Actually, she had a few. I'm looking for a new love, baby.
Oh, love that song.
The name of this band or artist contains 5 words, but one of them happens twice.
Kaka Juju?
That's kind of the case.
One of the, like, 5 words, but one of them happens twice. Oingo Boingo.
You're not saying things that happen twice. You're just
I know, right?
Phrases that kind of sound alike.
I just figure if I say them, something will eventually hit.
Who were the most important members of the revolution who weren't named Prince?
Wendy and Lisa.
Oh, Lisa, and Cult Jam Force.
There you are.
I wonder if I take you home.
Nope.
All Cried Out.
No. How have you named 2 other Lisa songs?
Because I'm a black woman who was born and was living life. In 1987, I was a smooth 11 years old. So
you were the target audience.
Clearly,
that's true.
They would play it on the radio and say, "This one goes out to Camila in Toledo."
Specifically, yes, every time.
It's head to toe.
That's
it's
right.
Lisa and Cult Jam.
Cool.
With head to toe.
Head to toe.
Wait, is that, that's not the same Lisa, right? I was just fishing for the name.
Correct. Yes, it is totally different. Oh. Lisa.
It's just one Lisa, right?
It's one Lisa. Yes. I think she got the name, and I'm pulling this maybe from like a VH1 whatever Behind the Music. And I think like she got the name because she was, yeah, she was so hot. Like she was so cute. Like people, dudes would be like, Lisa, Lisa. Like that was like, I think that's how her name came about.
That's like how Pink got her name, but a little different.
How did Pink get her name? Is it from her vagina?
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, really?
I'm going to assume. Yeah, that's what I always thought.
The schoolyard rumor about Pink was, you know, that she was sleeping with perhaps a gentleman of color. And this was his first dalliance with the other side of the aisle. And he exclaimed, oh, it is Pink. And that's why she has that name. That's what someone told me in like the 11th grade. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yikes.
I'm trying to figure out how much of that's going to make it into the finished episode.
Oh man. All right, friends.
It's either all or none.
I know, right? Because it has to be the whole thing or none of it, honestly.
I think probably the whole thing. Oh my gosh.